Hey everybody, Shane here to tell you about my friend's Music Record Shop. Check them out, 4191A Manchester Avenue in the heart of the Grove, right between the demo and the ready room. This Friday, National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, they got new records from Sturgill Simpson, Al Green, Joey Badass, Between the Buried and Me, Primus Clutch, all those are in pink vinyl for National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Also new records for Eagles of Death Metal, Cheap Trick, Paul McCartney, and more. So go down and get yourself some new records. Every Friday is a listening party. 10% off any purchase. New music all day. Complimentary beer from Four Hands Brewery. Also come down this Saturday, October 3rd. Rock Paper Podcast presents Local Music Showcase. This month we're featuring Brother Lee and the Leather Jackals and Delta Soul Revival. That's 2 to 4, October 3rd, in the Music Record Shop. Live in-store performance. So come see us. Check out Music Record Shop on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, musicrecordshop.com.
This is Carl from The Urge, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast, y'all. Rock Paper Podcast.
Talk for hours, 'cause it's right, paper pie.
Tell me why.
It's nothing but a podcast.
Tell me why.
We're making this for your ass.
Tell me why.
All you gotta do is download Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, hanging out at Llewellyn's Pub in Webster Groves with Carl Grable.
Webster Groves, Missouri. What's up?
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to the show, man.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Well,
took you a while to get me on here. What's up with that?
Hey, man. I was trying. I was
You're
trying.
Original member. What's up?
Yeah. Oh, I know that.
I'm kidding, dude.
Yeah. We pretty much could have recorded a podcast before we actually hit record. We've been sitting here talking for a good while,
for sure.
Having fun. But I tried to mention how I tried to get the whole band together to sit down for the 100th, but it didn't work out at that time. But I'm glad I'm piecing it together piece by piece. The fifth piece.
So you still need who? Matt?
Yeah, Matt's the last one to complete the collection, to collect them all.
The collection.
Yeah.
That sounds creepy, dude.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm kidding. I had a great time hanging with Steve, Bill, John, and Jerry.
Those guys are the best.
It's really, for me, it's very entertaining and interesting to talk to them all individually, though, to get like their own sides of the stories and stuff. And
everyone's kind of got their own perspective,
sure,
and their own way of looking at it, for sure.
Yeah, it's fun, man. Again, like with Bill, I got to learn like how he joined the band and stuff. Like
up in Columbia.
Yeah.
Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah, he was telling me about like he was.
He just dropped out of school. We asked him the next day. He's like, Dad, I'm dropping out of school.
Yeah.
And he showed up in Springfield, and I was like, I guess you're in the band. That's awesome.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it was a great story. I had a lot of fun.
He tore it up on stage, too, that night.
Yeah. Yeah, he still does, man.
No, I know. I'm not saying he didn't. I was just we were just like, hey, man, we saw him. He was, like, playing, I don't know if they were playing in the basement yet or, you know, at his fraternity house. They were warming up or something. I think Steve called him up, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember all the details.
Sure.
A while back. And then he came up there and just rocked a solo, and Steve and I look at each other. We're like, this dude's rocking, dude.
Yeah.
And then I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Steve asked him to join the band or something like that. And Bill's like, all right, well, fuck it. I'm just quitting school.
Yeah.
Join the band.
Right.
You know, how can you ask for more dedication than that? You got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It was,
I think I might have hesitated one day.
Yeah.
He was just like, whatever, ninja smoke, I'm in, dude.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
That was fun. We sat in his kitchen, knocked it out. I sat with Jerry outside of Starbucks.
Hampton?
Yeah.
No, with Chippewa.
Chippewa, yeah. There you go.
That's one of the band's meeting spots.
Yeah.
That's right behind his house.
I think he walked there. John, we recorded outside of Breadco at Baldwin, I think, by School of Rock there.
Oh, okay. Right on.
And then I don't know. Steve's hot dogs.
Yep.
But yeah.
A new veggie dog's good, Steve. Nice job.
I'm a big fan of Steve's hot dogs, man.
People love that stuff, man.
Yeah.
It's like that veggie dog, throw some macaroni and cheese on that, dude, it's over.
Right. Yeah, man.
That's some good stuff.
Yeah.
Woo woo.
Waffle Dog Wednesday's going on.
I have seen those photos.
Yeah.
That is a genius move, by the way.
Yeah, they're quite tasty, man. I was down there.
They come with some syrup.
Yeah, it's got like a jalapeno.
A jalapeno syrup?
Yeah.
Damn, dude.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if I like the syrup as much for me, but
you don't like syrup?
I mean, I do like, but it's
what
it's,
do you got against syrup?
I don't know. I have no beef with syrup.
Well, you don't like jalapeno?
I don't know. Just
why are you hating on the syrup?
It's just weird, man. It's like I did one of these a while ago with some buddies, and they had a bottle of Crown Royal Maple. And
oh, right.
And I was like, it was the same kind of thing. Like, it was just weird to, like, have, like, a maple kind of flavor and have it in Crown. So, like, it was like getting drunk.
It's the wrong combination. Yeah. It was like getting drunk at breakfast.
Yeah, right.
Which is where you draw the line.
Yeah.
It's like I start drinking after breakfast.
Right.
Not during breakfast.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know.
It's too many worlds colliding.
Got my priorities, man. But yeah, it was kind of, you know, it's just kind of a weird combination for me. Like, I don't know. I liked it just plain without it. Like, so that's just my personal thing. So I don't know. It's just a weird having like jalapeno flavor going on in my waffle
with breakfast. Yeah,
like, that's kind of a strange thing, but.
So you get like a Mexican Wisconsin waffle dog.
Right. Unless it's in my eggs. I don't mind some kicking my eggs up a notch.
Oh, you like the spiciness?
Yeah, I like some of it.
Like that sriracha?
Yeah. I need to get another bottle. Devin Allman has a hot sauce, and I bought a bottle of it, and it's like a more like a chipotle kind of flavor to it, and it's really good stuff, anyway, it was fun to, like, when I bought the bottle, he's like, hey, try it on your eggs. So I went, next morning for breakfast, I was like, all right, throw a couple splashes on there, and just kick it up a little notch.
Dude, I tell you what, I mean, that's the only way to have ketchup, though, right? Do you do that? So, like, when you're rocking some fries, or I'm a vegetarian, but you're rocking a veggie burger or burger, whatever, and then you just have the ketchup, and you throw a little splash of whatever, hot sauce, Tabasco, whatever, and mix it in there. That's world.
Yeah. I don't do much of anything with ketchup, man. It's
you don't like that? Is it gross? Does it, like, freak you out?
Well, I don't know. Like, I can do a couple of fries or whatever if I do that. Like,
Well, you like your fries dry? You like the side of dry fries?
Yeah. All right. But I kind of mentioned how I work at the school, and just working around kids and ketchup is ruined. Like, I see kids putting ketchup on everything, and it's just like, I don't know.
Jell-O and ketchup, yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Some weird combos,
yeah,
dude.
For sure.
You know, it's weird, and even though that, like, a pizza has tomato sauce, but ketchup on pizza just kind of, like, messes my brain up.
Oh, yeah.
Usually most stuff doesn't. Kind of like you with your syrup.
Yeah. But
the ketchup and the pizza thing, dude, I can't
get
that.
I don't get that.
So where the kids are just like, they're just constantly just, their faces stained with ketchup sauce?
Pretty much, yeah.
Some gross ass nasty shit, isn't it?
Yeah, no, and then
what about mustard, though?
I like mustard.
Mustard? Yeah. What about that crusty stuff on the top of the mustard bottle? Doesn't that kind of like freak you out?
Yeah, I don't like that. Or the water whenever, you know, like if you don't shake it up and then you like...
Oh, dude, that's the worst. It's like, I'm just going to throw a little mustard on this burger and you get like an eighth of a cup of mustard water on there. Like dipping mustard water.
Right, yeah.
Dude, that's gross.
Yeah, that's bad news, man. But...
You go yellow mustard?
Yeah, I like spicy.
You like?
I like spicy brown mustard.
What about that grape poupon?
Yeah, I could do that.
You just like all the mustards?
Yeah, sure. I'm more of a mustard guy than a ketchup guy.
Horseradish mustard?
Yeah, I like horseradish.
Dude, that's
I like, you go to Arby's, get the horsey sauce and stuff or something.
I have not been to Arby's in forever. Well, there's not, I mean, all I can get there is like curly fries,
well,
I think.
Sure.
The rest of it's just nothing but just like... You know,
we six got the meats.
Dude, that is the best tagline of all time. I say that all the time. Yeah. We got the meats. Is that Ving Rhames?
I don't know.
What's his name? Earl Jones? What's his name?
James Earl Jones.
I thought it was James Earl Jones, and Meredith was like, dude, that is not James. Well, she didn't say dude. She's like, that's not James Earl Jones. I think it's Ving Rhames, isn't it?
It's pretty close. I don't know. I don't know if it does.
First, I thought it was that cat from the Green Line, but I think he's dead.
Yeah, he died a couple years ago. Because
he had that kind of real deep voice. Michael Clark Duncan, yeah. He had that super distinct deep voice.
Right.
And that's who I thought it was for a second after that, but I think it might be Ving Rhames. I have to look.
Yeah. I always think Ving Rhames, I think of... Pulp Fiction, when, nah, man, I'm pretty fucked up right now. Like, we are live at the Llewellyn's Pub, if you're hearing that.
Let me go over there and quiet him down.
man, we might as well get this all, the business part out of the way. throw some dates on here. Yeah, and then we can. But Carl and the rest of the guys of The Urge will be at the pageant November 20th and 21st.
That is correct.
And no openers this year, right?
No. I think we'll probably like throw a DJ on and okay. kind of like throw some period-specific music
yeah.
based upon what set we're playing. So, you know, like the first set, we got the okay from Rich Frame, the last owner of I think he's the only owner of Mississippi Night, so I'm not quite sure, before they turned it into a parking lot, essentially.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that place was like, you know, I mean, it was dear to our heart, you know what I mean? That was the first place that we just, you know, can act like idiots and, like, crush it and,
yeah.
you know, and play multiple nights and just, it just had that, it was just one of those clubs, man. It was like the CBGBs of, like, St. Louis, you mm-hmm. know? It just had that crazy vibe that anything can happen at Mississippi Nights, you know,
yeah.
you can have an all-ages show and, you know, it's just something that's just a part of us, and I think our fans, you know, they kind of think of that, or a lot of them, the ones that were around back then,
sure,
you know, kind of relate that place to us. And so the first set, we're going to try our best to kind of recreate the stage of Mississippi Nights at the pageant. The pageant is, I mean, the ceiling's much, much higher, so we're going to have to throw in a false ceiling and,
yeah.
you know, do some carpentry. We got, like, drawings and, you know,
okay.
Different stage sets. And then after that, then we're going to have kind of like our, you know, crazy big light show kind of stage set.
Yeah.
But we're going to do Receiving the Gift of Flavor at the Mississippi Nights set, you know, start to finish. And so that should be cool. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's a big undertaking for us. And we were just thinking about it. We're like, it's going to be really tough having, you know, opening acts during all that.
Yeah.
Changeover. It might be a lot, it might be a little, it just depends on, you know, a couple set pieces and stuff like that, but it's going to be interesting, man.
Yeah.
It's going to be weird not having over. I can't tell you the last time we did. I actually don't know when the last time it was.
Right.
If it's ever happened. You know, because we usually like playing with people, and
definitely,
it's always kind of gets us motivated, and we go up there and we knock it out. But
yeah. Well, it's something I look forward to as a fan when you guys, for your openers too, because you always end up having a lot of my friends, and you know, you guys do a lot to support local guys coming up. So,
oh, for sure, man.
So it's absolutely. Always fun to see.
We had to do it.
Yeah.
Someone had to give us a shot.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
And it was not easy.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that's, and you usually have different, when you're doing, you know, I can remember like you guys did like, you know, like two shows Friday, Saturday, and then like you came back the next week and you did two more shows. And then it was like around Thanksgiving, like that, and like, and then, but you had like two different openers on each night. So like you had like, so there was a lot of different, you know, opening acts coming in. So that was, I think that was when you guys recorded the DVD also, like that time.
Yeah, my buddy Scott shot that.
Yeah.
And edited Scott Edgerton. What's up?
Yeah.
Hey.
I love that stuff, man. It was cool to see it too.
He's got some skills.
Yeah.
And Joe Farmer. Sorry, Joe.
But, you know, you were talking about the Mississippi Nights, though. I never,
that was before your time.
Yeah, before as a fan, like, I didn't.
Oh, you weren't always a fan.
Well, no, I've been a fan for a long time, but.
Since when?
Oh, I don't know. You guys, like.
Exact date.
Exact date, yeah.
Kidding.
So, like, I don't know. I was kind of right in that window of when you guys were on
breaking
hiatus
up.
And stuff,
right.
Yeah. Because I was like super pumped when the announcements for the, you know, whenever you guys started doing pageant shows again and stuff. And,
yeah, that was awesome, man.
I
think we were all kind of excited about it.
Yeah,
doing it, you know.
So I didn't have like a, I have you know, some older cousins, but I didn't have anybody like taking me to shows and stuff when I was younger and things. So I try to do that now. Like I have my my wife's little brother, my brother-in-law. He's mm-hmm. now 17, but I've been
right.
taking him shows for a couple of years now. I took him to Pops like at 14 and stuff, and like introducing
awesome.
Him to, you know, some. I actually took him to see Fivefold one night, who opened for you guys, and
right,
and
absolutely,
and he loved them and stuff. So
cool.
Stuff like that. So I missed out on a lot of the Mississippi Nights, but I've heard all kinds of stories from, you know, people around town and of how much fun it was there. And actually, just Fishbone was in town at Blueberry Hill, and then like somebody shared a video, and I watched it with like it was Fishbone at Mississippi Nights in like 89 or something like, or whatever it was, something like that.
Right. I think I have a video cassette of them from 92 or something that someone bootlegged. Yeah. I got. That's what those dudes were just nuts back in the day. Oh my God.
Yeah. It was, I don't know if it was 80, it was something around that early, late 80s, early 90s, or whatever it was, but they were like, and it was just crazy watching the people like jumping on the stage and crowd surfing out and stuff, and like it was just, it looked like a wild party.
It was nuts. I mean, nowadays you just, there'd be like literally a stack like 2 feet high of lawsuits.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, what you used to be able to get away with back in the day, it was just nuts. Yeah. I mean, people were stage diving, people had broken arms, they'd come back from the hospital, back to the show. You know what I mean? It's just like, everyone had like a cut or a bruise or whatever, and they were like, cool, I had the best time ever.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it would just be nothing but lawsuits.
Well, also nowadays, everybody's holding their phone the whole time, recording everything on video, so it's hard to...
That's true.
It's hard to get too wild.
Yeah, unless you want to break that $800 phone.
Yeah, right, yeah. Oh, it's my 6 Plus, man.
Six Plus? Come on, what's up? It's a cool phone, actually.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm an Android guy, but I love Apple products too. So don't get me wrong.
Sure, I have an Android, but I'm not. I do have a.
I'm not biased.
Yeah. Well, whoever, it's good competition, man. Whoever puts out the best product and stuff.
I don't know. I don't know if there is a best product.
Yeah. I think. I don't know. I just.
I think they're different in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's all personal preference. You know, they all have a lot of similar things, but yeah, it's all in the interface and how you whatever you find a preference in.
Yeah, start Apple or do you start Android?
Started Android.
If you start Android, you can go to Apple. Yeah. No big deal. You start Apple and go to Android, your brain melts.
Sure.
Dude, I know too many people. There's like I don't know how anything works. Yeah. Well, it's because it's not in front of your face.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know? I do have like
Apple's
figured
out how to make everything easy.
The only Apple product I have right now is my iPod. So,
iPod? Which one?
I have a 80 gig classic, or a 160 gig classic.
You got with the wheel?
Yeah.
Damn,
yeah,
dude.
Still holding on to it, man. It's
160? That has an actual hard drive in it, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like a moving hard drive.
Yeah, it's, I can do a lot with it, but it's like, it's crazy. Good, like 2,300 songs on.
Still make those clicks. Still make those clicks when you turn that wheel, like.
You can kind of like mute it, like the actual sound effect of it, but you can feel it like clicking your click wheel. But it's crazy though. Like just to think of that, like the fact that like okay, so like I said, I've got like 23,000 songs on this thing, and like you think of like what that would have been 20 years ago, that would have been an entire house of, or at least several rooms of your house full of records and,
right.
And tapes and CDs or whatever.
8 tracks.
Yeah.
Of Slade.
Right. And then now you can fit that in your pocket. Like, that's, it's crazy to think of how far the technology's come. And then now it's even since then, like, they've got, like, terabytes, they're tiny little things, so it's like
you don't even need it anymore, everything's in the cloud.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I mean, it's like you just grab what you need to grab, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's what Spotify is. So
definitely
Spotify is, you just grab whatever you want and you don't have to like curate it yourself.
Yeah,
that was the biggest problem I always had with the iPad and iTunes, which I hate iTunes. And it's like, dude, I mean, you ever do something in iTunes on your computer and you like move some music and then you got like all these orphan files in there?
Yeah.
What the fuck do you do with that?
Right.
You just start over.
Yeah.
I would just start over in iTunes all the time. And someone gave me a gigantic hard drive full of music. I was just like, you know what? I am not going to spend the time. I don't care if you gave me a bunch of like, early AC/DC or whatever, just because that's what everyone had. Because it's going to sound shitty. And it's all that stuff from like way back in the day, and it's like an MP3 and just a shitty bitrate or something like that. And you spend like hours and hours and hours putting together like playlists and stuff like that. Dude, it's like, just throw that hard drive away and get like Spotify.
Sure.
I don't know. It's like, I just can't hold on to like the digital music. Yeah. I don't want to do it. It's just too much work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean,
do you have to deal with that? Well, you got that 160 gigs.
I mean, there's a little bit of that, like the whole tagging and shit, the ID3s tags right. and stuff, trying to make sure all your albums line
labor
up.
Labor intensive,
yeah, right?
Yeah, dude.
But I don't know. It's yeah, there's a little bit of that. But
did you pay for a lot of your music?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of it's
how much of it?
Pretty good, Sean. I mean, like,
to put you on the spot, dude. People gave me a bunch of free stuff, too.
Yeah. But, like, I mean, there's a good majority of that is all local music that I bought. I mean, a lot of my...
I bought a ton, man.
Yeah. A lot of it's just friends of mine. You know, there's stuff on there, obviously, that is not paid for, but...
sure.
It's paid for at one time or another.
No, dude. It was just like... But there's, like, all kinds of stuff. I got, like, old box sets of, like, The Clash and Robert Johnson and, you know, The Police and stuff like that. And, you know, I initially ripped it, but I was just like, you know, you just don't have to have the tangible good anymore. You know,
sure.
You know, the one thing I do miss, though, I miss the artwork.
Yeah.
That's the thing I miss the most. I almost wish I could just buy the digital release and have them just mail me the artwork. You know, like, you could pay, like, $3 extra. Of something that you thought was just like absolutely fucking kick ass, and they would just send you the art where you need to sit there while you're listening to it, like reading the lyrics. You know what I mean? I think there's something there. Like with me, it always like would click more. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
Because you would see like a visual, and the visual would somehow make sense with the music, and not in a way that you had thought before. Mm-hmm. And then actually like reading the lyrics as opposed to, you know, going on to Rap Genius or something and finding them, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I think there's something that would be kind of like a cool thing that if people would start doing.
Yeah.
It would be awesome.
Yeah, I'm a big advocate for that. Like just, you know, having the physical copy of it because of for the artwork and the liner notes and like and even like the fact that my name has been mentioned in a couple of liner notes is, you know, you don't get that on when you buy the MP3, so it's cool to see that
get
stuff.
Out the highlighter and get a frame
so but you know I love it, you know, and it's all just a part of my crazy
I think it's a part of it. I think a lot of people will, you know, they probably might never experience that, you know what I mean, which is kind of weird, you know, when you really think about it, because I would always make a bigger connection with the artist based upon like some sort of, you know artwork visual with the music. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have to be pictures of the band, it doesn't matter what it is, but you know, it's like their interpretation of what they're thinking at that moment, hopefully. You know what I mean? If they actually spend enough time to actually care about, you know, who the artist was that was working on it, and, you know, how things were laid out, which, you know, there's always one or two dudes in every band that, you know, is concerned with making sure that the artwork is, like, taken care of, so.
Well, and even, too, like, if you're into gear and stuff, a lot of times bands will mention, like, what they used to play with and stuff like that, and you all, as if you're, like, aspiring to be like them, you're like, man, I gotta go, you know, I want to go get this
Flying V.
I want to go get this, you know, amp and this guitar and try to be just like Eddie Van Halen or whatever, you know, and stuff. And
that dude, Jerry and John in the band are just Van Halen fanatics, but that dude would just like throw shit together.
Right.
Eddie would just like, I don't know, I'm a creamer body, I'll throw a fender neck on it. I don't know. If that's wrong, I apologize, guys, because they'll probably be mad at me. He just throw stuff together. He Frankenstein guitars together.
Right.
And then he play, and you're just like, that's not even fair, dude. You know? You're just that good. You can just make the biggest hunk of junk sound, like, unbelievable.
All right.
You know? So, yeah, I know what you mean, though. It's like, because back in the day, you're just like, how did they get that sound?
Yeah.
You know? You're always, like, searching to kind of get that sound of, like, someone that you kind of want to emulate.
Sure. Who, did you have any of those guys for bass players that you looked up to?
Yeah, back in the day. And still, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, the first guy that I really, like, super connected with. There was a bunch of them, like, around a period of time. It's like, Flea from the Chili Peppers back in the day, big fan. This guy, which most people don't know, his name is Jaco Pastorius. He's kind of like a jazz guy, and he probably was, and jazz is the wrong word, but he probably influenced the way I play and wish I could play, because the guy's ridiculous.
Right.
Probably a little more so than anyone else, because he kind of had that aggressive attitude, but he was just like, I mean, this guy was just, he was an aggressive, like progressive, like jazz guy, and I hate to say it, I really kind of hate that style of music, but this guy was so good, you just can't like deny him.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, Jaco Pastorius, you know, this Eric Avery from Jane's Addiction, people are just like, why would that guy be like, I mean, it's like that guy played, like, he didn't have to play. He kind of like showed me that you didn't have to play all the time. Jaco Pastorius told me I had to play all the time. And Eric Avery kind of from Jane's Addiction was like, you don't have to play all the time. You just have to play something really kick ass.
Yeah.
You know, you can just play a few notes here and it's just like, oh, okay, there you go. You know, right. And you kind of listen to that and you're just like, that dude's just ridiculous. So
yeah. I've heard that, I can't think of the examples, but I've heard people like compare that, like kind of like with guitar players and stuff, like, you know, there's the guy that can shred like crazy and stuff, but there's also the there's those guys that you appreciate because they sit back and they don't do that stuff, and you learn like kind of like some of the stuff, like when it's more I don't know, tasteful or whatever it is, but it's like it's right. A different style, but the fact that like
if the line lends itself, why clutter it? Which the guys in my band will probably laugh because they know I try and play every note under the planet on every song, but you know, that's just kind of the way I was like built back in the day.
But
it's kind of a full circle thing, because when you start playing, all you want to do is impress people. That's right. All you care about, all you want to do. And I was never the guy, it happened one time, but was the guy that would go in a music store and just know someone else's licks. I don't know anyone else's songs other than mine, because I never played in a cover band. I never really played it. Well, I mean, we play a few covers here or there, but hell, I forget it half the time. I forget my own stuff half the time. But the thing is that, so because of that, I wouldn't have like my bass version of Stairway to Heaven in the music store, you know, which everyone was like, or, you know, Smells Like Teen Spirit or whatever they're playing in the music store, like every kid does. I just like try and make something up that I was playing, you know what I mean? I did play this this bass, which I really wanted to buy at this old music store called Silver Strings, and it was a Music Man bass, a Saber, which I eventually ended up getting one, which is like really from that era, like the late 70s, early 80s. Those Sabers were really hard to find because they didn't make a ton of them, those Music Man Sabers, and Pizzoni actually found one when we were on tour in Cleveland or Columbus. We're in Ohio somewhere. And he was like, dude, you've got to come get it. So I went and I got it. And I was just like, I negotiated with the guy. And he was like, I'm not negotiating. So I had to pay full price. But he knew what he had. So I had to get it. But I was in Silver Strings and I was playing it. And somehow that one day, it was like, I was like slapping and popping. Like fleeing. And people were just like, dude, that's the best. And I was like, this is amazing. And so apparently, but I was talked out of buying that bass because apparently it was the most unlucky bass on the planet. Because every time someone would buy it, it would show back up in the store like within 3 to 6 months, and the person who had bought it like somehow fell on bad luck. And it showed up at that place multiple times. Dude, it was like the most amazing. Yeah. So I was like terrified by that bass. So I just,
bad mojo there, huh?
It was, apparently. But that thing sounded good.
Yeah. Man.
That was the devil's bass.
Yeah. That's good. You gotta sell your soul to the devil at the crossroads.
Dude, I might have. That thing sounded good.
Yeah. you ever watch that Oh Brother Wart, though?
I have. I can't. I'm bad at quotes, I'm bad at remembering specific scenes. So, so if you're looking for something, I'm not giving it to you.
My brain is just full of...
I know the Dapper Dan.
Yeah.
You're playing that show at the end.
Yeah, but that was the whole, like, that. There was that guy, he met the devil at the crossroads, and then he was going to go sing into the can for, you know, and stuff with the guy. And,
right.
But, yeah.
No one ever seems to get the best of that deal, do they?
Yeah.
They always can't get, like, screwed by the devil.
Right.
You know, it's like, why do the deal?
Yeah.
Never understood it.
Yeah. I think Homer Simpson sold his soul to the devil for a donut, didn't he?
I'm pretty sure Homer did.
Yeah, so I mean, whatever it takes. Sometimes, if you really want that donut, you know.
Well, donuts are delicious. Was it? Was it the pink donut? Yeah, with the sprinkles?
I think so. I don't know. I love The Simpsons, but it's hard. I'm not. I'm there. I mean, like, I don't have all that cataloged in my brain like most of the useless stuff I have.
John Pizzoni, our drummer, does. He used to just put on. I'm not sure exactly what he did on the bus, but he would put in like The Simpsons. And John, I apologize if I'm getting this wrong. And he would just listen to The Simpsons while playing video games.
Right.
And he would just, I mean, he had all the quotes.
Oh, yeah. There's like stuff like probably Tommy Boy and stuff like that for me. Like, that's a movie I watched over and over on repeat. And we had HBO, you know, like when that was on HBO.
Right.
Like the first time and like
you just marathon it.
Yeah, pretty well. Like we had the satellite dish, so it was like you had the east feed and then the west feed kind of thing.
So you get like 2 hours behind.
Yeah, so I'd like watch it like a couple times a day, like in that summer, and I was like, just because I loved it so much, and so that movie's like permanently ingrained in my brain. Just
I just saw some documentary on Farley. Did you see that?
Yeah, I Am Chris Farley. That one.
Or it might have been. Yeah, it was on. I got like half of it.
Yeah, no, I haven't. I saw the trailer and I really wanted to watch it. I just haven't sat down to actually catch it yet.
The guy's hilarious.
Oh, for sure. And but yeah, the trailer looked incredible, and I was like, you know, almost crying watching that. It's like it's a crazy story, and you know his life that he lived in 33 years, and it's just nuts.
He packed 100 years in 33 years, for sure.
You know? Yeah, I think, but that's, you know, that goes back to the same, his Belushi was the guy that, you know, he idolized, and like Belushi did the same thing. He lived till 33 and stuff, and so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that they both lived to 33 years.
Yeah, I think, I'm pretty sure that's correct, but yeah, they both, it was kind of a, you know, crazy thing that happened to be that way, but the same. It's also kind of what's like Hendrix, 28 and stuff, like or something like
crazy.
That. Like how many people died at 28?
It's funny, you like look at pictures of him and you think he looks like a 40-year-old.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right.
A lot of that stuff. You're just like, you're 28 years old.
I think him and like Mama Cass and all, like they all died at, like 28 or something like that. It was like, it was kind of crazy. Like, I mean, you think, yeah, the same thing. Like you look at Hendrix, the guy is an icon, but how much art he created in that short amount of time, you know, it's like...
Right. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
When you think about it, it's... Yeah, they just didn't understand how those drugs affected you.
Yeah.
Now we have a general idea how that works.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's some crazy stuff.
Oh, my God. It's like ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys live big, though. They're just going for it.
Yeah.
You know? Because, I mean, you think about it, it's like uncharted territory, you know? They were just, it was like the wild west of drugs.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're the you know, the biggest thing happening. Everybody's just throwing themselves at you. Money, drugs, girls, whatever.
And you don't know how any of that's going to affect you because it's all brand new, right?
Yeah.
So all that stuff was new. It's just nothing but like hippies in San Francisco doing heroin.
Right.
And you're just like, everyone's doing it. It's got to be fine. I guess this stuff, it just takes its toll, man.
Yeah.
You never hear of like any story where someone's like says, "I'm going to try heroin," and it just ends up well.
Yeah,
you
sure.
Know?
No,
I don't know. I don't know of any.
I never heard a success story of it, but yeah, it's always bad news.
So we should make a movie about that.
Yeah. That's bad stuff, man. It's unfortunately it's taken some people I know that are. You know, around here, and I think it's weird how Missouri's like actually has a pretty big problem with all that stuff. Like it,
I think it's just cheap now. It's easy to get.
Yeah.
You know, when I was younger, it was non-existent essentially.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was just weed. People would do like, you know, some psychedelics and stuff like that, and everyone drank. That was about it.
Yeah.
You know. But now it's just like, it's just nuts. I mean, I live in Webster. I went to Webster High School. And it's like, you know, they said that there was a crazy epidemic there. I'm just like, dude, that's just nuts. But I mean, if it's available and it's cheap, you know, and you're young, you know, I mean, hell, you know, you have a couple of beers at a party and someone's like, try some heroin, it's fine.
Right.
You know, that's probably how it starts.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's, I don't know. I don't get like, if you think about, like, I don't know. That's crazy. But anyway, enough about that.
Yeah, it's a downer, dude.
Yeah,
come on, let's get on some crazy stuff.
Man,
probably my fault,
here?
I'm sure. See what happens when you start talking about Hendrix?
That's where it goes, man. I'm excited. I haven't watched that, but they did that movie too. I wanted to see that. Was
with Andre?
Yeah, with Andre 3000 as.
But they didn't. They couldn't use any Hendrix music, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's why I heard
the family was like, "No, you can't."
Right.
Use it.
But he looked just like Jimmy after they put the hair on and stuff. And
that's
like,
a talented dude, man.
Yeah,
he's an amazing actor. He's just like just. As a musician, he's ridiculous, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I saw those.
A super talented cat.
I got to see him live for the first time at Lou Fest last year.
Oh, I didn't get to see. I heard they just crush it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, but it was also kind of weird.
It was like one of their first shows back,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and it was almost like two
shows.
Two, yeah, because they
Big Boy would do his own thing.
They weren't on stage together very much. It was pretty much like a Big Boy and Andre, and they just kept swapping back and forth. Which I know, you know, Speaker Box and what was it, Love, whatever the record. Anyway,
right.
that record was essentially like a split album.
Well, they were just gonna make two solo albums, right?
Yeah.
And then they were just like, dude, whatever, let's just put these out together.
Right.
And then it just blew up.
Yeah. But yeah, it wasn't like they did a lot of the old stuff together. Like it was, they did. I mean, there was some of it, but it was almost like two separate shows and. It was just kind of
that's kind of weird. How would they do it? Would they just like come out and do a couple of Andre songs and do a couple of Big Boy songs?
It was almost like every song they
switched
pretty much like that. Like the band would stay out there and the girl backup singers and stuff. And like they had, pretty sure it was that's Sleepy Brown that sings with them and stuff. He was out there and things. And
right.
That's my best recollection of it. Like I was also pretty far back and. Like I really love their music and things, but it was like that crowd got like so big right there. It's like it's really hard to enjoy the moment when you're, you know, half a mile in the back of the field and you know it's like those big festivals like that.
Yeah, that's one of those things where it's like you either fight your way up there and get a good seat, and then it's like if you want to go to the bathroom and get a drink, it's horrible.
Right.
Or you kind of like stay around the fringe, and then you have the freedom to do something, sure. But then you can't see anything.
Well, my problem
it's
that
like
year,
a no win.
Yeah, I loved a lot of the earlier acts, so I didn't want to miss anybody earlier.
Right.
So like I know a lot of people like they probably didn't care, so they went and stood up there, parked, you know, grabbed a spot early.
Right.
But like you know, there was like Cake was playing and
oh yeah, this guy's great.
Blackberry Smoke and all kinds of great bands I wanted to see. Vintage Trouble was there last year and
cool.
So I really wanted to see all them play and.
Yeah, those festivals, man, they can be a complete... It can be just, like, such a pain in the ass to have to go see a band sometimes,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Sometimes.
You know? Sometimes it's worth it. Sometimes you just got to do it.
Oh, man.
Just get in there and just be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Just for the moment, you know what I mean? And then
yeah.
Once you get it, it's like the super payoff.
I love it, man. It's a big part of my life, the rush of going to a live show and just...
There's nothing like it. You really, it's hard to, you can't recreate it in any way. You know, it's like there's too many, all your senses are going, you know.
Yeah.
It's like you can see it on YouTube, you can listen to it on a record, but I mean, just being in that environment and kind of feeling that energy, you know, or that emotion or whatever it is, it's like you can't, I don't know how you can recreate it other than going to a show.
Yeah. I mean, that's what makes me such a big fan of seeing you guys live because... It's such a crazy, you know, from everything, just the energy in the crowd, the, you know, and then every year you guys keep adding more to the production of things, you know,
as we call it, eye raping.
Yeah.
We do, I mean, sometimes it's like, oh my God, I feel bad for the crowd. It's like too many moving lights. We do it, we have that conversation in the band. It's like, do we have too many things going on that it's just like, Meredith will come back to me and she'll be like, yeah, you blinded me like 20 times during that show. You need to chill that shit out. So it's, yeah, we always want it to be a bigger show. we always want it to be more interesting or different, or you don't want to do the same thing every time.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, sometimes you can go too far.
Yeah.
Which we may have done a couple times.
I love it though, man. I have a great time. That's why I'm there. I try to be there pretty much every one of them since you guys got back together and started playing. And
that's awesome, man. We really appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Right? Yeah.
It's the reason we do it, you know, we just want people to have as good a time as we are, you know, which is, you know, I mean, that's the end goal.
Right.
Because we had an amazing time up there playing, and our appreciation for people reciprocating that back is just unbelievable, you know, just like enjoying it as much as we do. It's I don't want to get all hippie, but it's like a, you know, just this like energy kind of love fest kind of thing. And
definitely,
it's just like you kind of feed off it and everyone's just having a good time. From what I think, because obviously I've never been in the crowd while we play, but it's just like, it seems like it's a lot of positive energy out there.
Yeah.
You know, which is, I think, what we're trying to, you know, get out there. Maybe some angst from time to time, you know what I mean?
Well, which, I think, you know, there's exactly that, Mike, a moment I remember, I think it was like 2 years ago, maybe. They all start to run together after a while.
happens with me too.
Yeah, but I was at you guys did two shows back to back,
right?
And it was like Friday, Saturday, whatever it was. Anyway, the one show was like all ages on the floor and no alcohol down
right
there, and that show was totally different than the alcohol in the pit on the floor. Like that show, like, you know, it totally changed the dynamics of everything. Like, you know, you guys played the songs fine, but the crowd energy, and then like in turn your energy, because like I said, you guys feed off of that crowd, you know.
Right.
And but yeah, so like it was a very two
sides, different shows,
two sides of the coin right there. So it was very interesting to be a part of both of those.
Which one was crazier, the drinking or the non-drinking?
Yeah, the drinking one was nice.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Because, yeah, like they had, so yeah, they had to keep the kids that had all the it was an all-ages thing, and it was all the kids had to be on the right side of the pageant over there, and the alcohol had to be
right
to stay at the bar. The first night it was all had to be at the bar.
Right.
So everybody stayed up there. The second night, the kids had to be on the right side, and then they let all the alcohol on the floor or whatever it was. Vice versa, maybe. But,
right.
Yeah, that night was nuts. Everybody's down in the drinking in the pit and getting wild. And
that's why people always booked us back in the day.
Yeah.
It was like, I remember we were playing this bar called Kennedy's way back in the day, and we were playing with some good friends of ours. And, you know, they drew more people than we did, but our per capita drank $20 per person at the bar.
Yeah.
And so they wanted us to like headline the show, and we're just like, we felt horrible about it because these are our best friends, and you know, they just, you know,
right,
they're the reason we kind of got a start, you know what I mean? And so it's like, you guys are headlining because your fans drink $20 a person.
Yeah.
And we're just like, oh, and then it like kind of clicked. I was like, oh, okay, I guess, you know, because we talk about drinking and
yeah,
you know, do like ridiculous stuff, because I mean, that's just what we were about, you know what I mean? Just being ridiculous and having fun,
yeah,
and doing this and that. So, you know, it's still kind of that way, you know, like, you know, the pageant guys are like, we can't wait for you guys to play. We're just like, why? It's like, oh, okay, our crowd drinks.
Yeah.
And they like to have a good time.
Yeah.
You know,
it's probably a good time to mention that you guys finally paired up, and you've got your Urge beer coming out. Finally,
nice segue, by the way.
Yeah, there you go.
Look at you.
Hey, man. Yeah. 120 of these, I'm starting to get the hang of this thing.
You are getting the hang of it. 120?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got, so my neighbors, I should say, Seth and Liz Fawcett, I was at a party of theirs, I don't know, it was probably a year and a half ago or something like that, and one of their really good friends, Josh Goodridge from Public House Brewery, I think Seth grew up with him, if I'm not mistaken, he was there, and, you know, we're just, like, hanging out and just having a couple beers. And I think in passing, we just said, oh, it'd be cool if we did a beer together or something like that. And he's like, cool. I was like, yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be awesome. And then, you know, just never even thought about it.
Right.
And those guys, I mean, they're getting pretty big. So they're just, they're doing tastings all over the place. So they're doing like this big tasting at Vindicet. And I don't know how I found out. Maybe like Seth or somebody said they're going down there. They said Josh is going to be in town. So I just called him. I was like, can I take you guys to breakfast? And we just went there. I just kind of like pitched the idea real quick. I was like, listen, it's the 20th anniversary. We're receiving the Gift of Flavor. You know, we're thinking about doing some really cool stuff this year with it. Is that something you guys might be interested in? And he said, yeah, well, let me take my guys. I hadn't even talked to the band yet. I was like, well, first, those guys in the band have to want to do it too. You know what I mean? It was just like seed idea kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And so the guys in the band were excited about it. And then, you know, he's like, yeah, all the people at Public House are really excited about it. And then come to find out that Josh Goodrich is one of his first shows ever. Was it was Gravity Kills and Us in Rolla. That was like one of his first shows ever, so it's like kind of like full circle for him in kind of an interesting way. And and those guys are just, I mean, they're just, they're just like the coolest dudes. So it's like, it's if like you and I just decided to throw something together, you'd be like, oh dude, yeah, well, try this and try that, it'll be cool, it won't be that big of a deal. And you know, it was just like that. It was just like the easiest thing that's ever happened. You know, where it's like, oh, okay, well, what about this kind of beer, what about that kind of beer? And we're just like, you know, I think most of our fans would probably like this. And they, you know, they would threw that to me, and I was like, yeah, I think so, I think that'd probably be cool. Talk to the guys, and everyone was in. And you know, so we've gone down times and we help put some ingredients in the beer. Like Bill and I were like grinding the coriander and putting, you know, some of the orange, the Halo orange peel in like the beer and stuff like that. And so it's just a really kind of easy, organic thing. And then just out of the blue, which makes it even like funnier to me, because our first album, we featured this guy named Cole 40 Freddy. Well, it's that first album, it's a cassette.
Yeah.
And called Bust Me Dat 40.
Yeah.
So so instead of doing six packs, we're doing a 750 milliliter bottle, which is essentially a nowadays 40.
Right.
So now we have a 40 ounce beer, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, that is how it's going to be put out. I mean, they're going to put it out in kegs too, but it's cool, man. It's really kind of like humbling to like work with people and be able to do something like that, and be able to kind of like bring that, you know, to our fans, and from a selfish standpoint to us, because I was like, my God, I mean, how cool would that be?
Yeah.
If you could have your own beer, it's just like, it's fun. You know what I mean? It's just this fun, cool collaboration that we can do with those guys. And, you know, we're kind of working on a cookbook, which is almost done.
Oh, yeah.
Which will feature a lot of the recipes from the beer, with the beer and stuff like that. But,
nice.
Yeah, so we're going to start ramping up. I think we're going to have a tasting here at the TikTok. I'll just say it now. I think this is right. If not, I mean, make sure you check our website. But it's going to be open to the public. It'll be at the TikTok right next to Steve's Hot Dogs on Magnolia, October 11th, which is a Sunday at 2 p.m. So it's open to the public. It's going to be Gift of Flavor beer, free tasting. I'm sure they'll probably have larger glasses on tap and other stuff like that. And
yeah.
I'm sure there'll be some giveaways and stuff like that. So. I'm just going to throw that out there. I mean, it's 99% there. So if I'm wrong, I apologize to everybody. But, I mean, that's pretty much the deal. So, yeah, I mean, it's dude, it's as awesome as it can be. I'm like,
great.
Super excited. As you know, like, with the VIP stuff at the Urge shows, I mean, I was taking, like, Budweiser and Bud Light bottles myself, making labels and, you know, taking the Bud Light labels off of the 40s and then putting, you know, like, our labels for the shows on there and stuff. We've done that for a couple of years, you know, if I'm not mistaken. So it's kind of interesting how it all like kind of fell together in this kind of interesting.
Sure.
And I didn't even pitch the 40 ounce idea; they pitched it.
Yeah.
And they'd never been to the VIP thing, which is like so bizarre. So stuff's in the ether sometimes, you know.
Yeah, no, that's cool, man. That's
It's gonna be awesome.
Man. Exciting stuff.
I'm very excited.
It's fun to see, like, you know. That just to see what you can come up with. Like, if you throw that just an idea, it might sound crazy, but then it happens and you're like, this is awesome. Like, this is, you know.
That's my entire life.
Yeah.
As you know from our conversation before this, is, all I do is like throw out just ridiculous ideas.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, they work.
Yeah.
You know?
You throw enough, one of them's gonna stick. And
yeah, they do. You know?
Yeah.
You just never know.
But yeah, I'm excited to get myself a bottle and
Yeah, well, I'm going down to Raleigh. So I don't know when this is coming out, but so this weekend, is it the 26th, I think, is Saturday?
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Right.
So Public House has two breweries. They have one which is right next door to St. James Winery. It's a huge place. And then they have one in Raleigh, which was their first place. And so they're having an Oktoberfest in Raleigh on the 26th. So that's going to be the first place that the beer is available. So we're going to go down and get a whole bunch of bottles. It'll be here like mid-October. So
nice. Yeah.
You know, excited. You know, get you one, dog. What's up?
Yeah. I'm not even much of a beer drinker, but I'll buy it.
I know. I tried to buy you one tonight. Yeah. You wouldn't even take it. What's up with that?
Hey, this is some delicious water, though.
I know. Yeah. Well, they've got one of the better water taps in town. That's why I come here.
Hey, that's the thing. I don't really drink much, so like probably one.
That's good. That's probably much better for you than someone who drinks a lot.
Yeah. Well, but the problem is I drink a lot of Mountain Dew. So like if I could quit doing that too, then I'd probably be better off. But that's my one. No,
yeah, that is my Mountain Dew's good. My problem is I kind of gave up. So I had to give up coffee because I was getting like too agitated. So I probably did the dumbest thing on the planet, which was give up coffee, but start drinking 5-Hour Energy.
Yeah.
It's got vitamin B. Come on, it's got right. something in it, you know. But it doesn't, I don't feel like I want to strangle people at the end of the day, which coffee kind of does. It has this slow agitation with me for some reason.
Doesn't it?
Diet Coke is the worst.
Yeah.
Diet Coke makes me as agitated as a human being could possibly be. So I just kind of gave that stuff up. But, I mean, it's like I'll drink 5-Hour Energy in the morning, but that's about it. But I would drink, like, the Diet Mountain Dew. And that stuff is probably even worse for you than regular Mountain Dew.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because it's got all this, I don't know, whatever, formaldehyde or wherever they put it. Something super gross.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I really don't. I kind of gave up the soda thing. I give up coffee, like, every 3 months. And I always end up, you know, getting some ridiculous, like, you know, 5 shots of espresso or something like that with coconut milk, and then my brain wants to explode and I want to kill somebody, so I get off it. So. I love caffeine. Does weird stuff to me, man. Does it mess you up?
No, I think.
I'm the only person that does it.
It keeps me going, but like I don't know. I'm pretty mellow all the time, so
that's good.
Even if I chugged a Red Bull or whatever, I still
see. I'm good on Red Bull. I'm good on Red Bull, but I'm bad on coffee.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Huh. Nah. Yeah, I don't know.
Some weird DNA stuff, dude.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm no scientist or...
Body scientist?
Or doctor. But yeah, I was talking about the beer and all the 20th year and stuff, but I was I was also at your live album re-recording for... receiving the gift of flavor, so that was a good party.
That was something very new for us.
Yeah,
we I don't know. We just kind of like had an idea where it's like it would be cool. I mean, because we have to do something for the 20th anniversary.
Yeah,
and we're just like, well, what can we do that no one else that we know of has done? I'm sure someone else has done it. I just don't know anyone who's done it. We're like, okay, well, we should do kind of like maybe a live recording. We're talking about maybe doing it at the pageant or whatever. And it was like, well, what if we did it? And we're just thinking, like, you know, like the Beatles would, like, have some studio songs, and they just have all their friends in there, and they hang out.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just like, man, that's kind of cool. You know, it's like if you have all these people kind of, like, hanging out and just kind of being a part of it in a fun, positive way, and they can kind of be a part of the recording along with us. That's really what this is all about, because it's not really about us and us saying, yay, look at us, you know, 20 years ago about this kick-ass album, which we happen to like. It's no, we're doing this because everyone else wants, or hopefully would like to be a part of this recording with us, and what better way to do it than to allow them to become a part of the recording experience itself, and, you know, kind of see us more from a human side. Than just, you know, these ridiculous people jumping around on stage right. and no one knows, you know what I mean? And so I hope it came off that way. It was very interesting. It was hard to find a venue. It was amazing to find one in the city that the band started in, you know, which was awesome, which was amazing. So and then to be able to I don't know, just let everyone kind of just... It's truly not the exact recording experience that happens in a studio, because that's really boring. Because it's like, drums, okay, let's bitch about the drums. Okay, bass, let's bitch about the bass and what needs to be changed. Let's bitch about the guitar. Bitching is the wrong word, but let's analyze it and fix what we need to fix or make better or whatever. And it's just this long analytical process of making an album.
Right.
And this was more just like, let's record it in kind of like a live, fun way, which kind of is the way that Receiving the Gift of Flavor was actually recorded back in the day, because we didn't have a lot of money, and we had to, and studio time's super expensive, so we're just like, okay, we're having a lot of us play at the same time, and then maybe we'll cut scratch vocal, and we'll use some of that, or we'll just, you know, do the vocal afterwards, and maybe we'll do some horns afterwards or whatever. But there wasn't, like, a ton of overdubs. I mean, it was just like what you heard most of the time was usually one take on, it was definitely one take for the drums and maybe like a take or two for the guitar and the bass, and then same thing with the horns and vocals, and it was like that.
Yeah.
The next album, it was just like everyone had their own take, like 17,000 takes, because the producer was just like, he is like a producer Nazi, you know what I mean? Everything has to be perfect and this and that, where it's like, okay, this is weird for us kind of thing. But we want to kind of recreate what happened during the initial recording experience and kind of let everyone kind of be a part of that with us. So we were a little scared too, because we had never done it.
Yeah.
We didn't know anything about it. We got a venue. We just like moved where we were going to record several times in our minds in the place. And, you know, I think it was fun for everybody, you know. I had a really good time.
Yeah. I had fun. I enjoyed it. It was interesting to see, like you said, from that side, being a part of it, and then being a part of the actual recordings, being able to sing.
Yeah, you are a vocalist on that album, by the way.
Getting to sing Drunk Asshole and Dirty Rat with you guys. That was cool. It was a very interesting night just to be a part of it. And
I think that was Bill's idea to have everyone sing on a track and give everyone credit. He said that's genius.
Yeah, that's cool.
Amazing, because that just even brings it more into the reason why we did it. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, I didn't get to. You guys had like Xbox Ones or something set up for like listening. Thing or something like that they had going on, or
so we had some listening stations off to the side. It was what was going to the Pro Tools rig, the recording rig, and you could listen to it going to the rig live.
Yeah,
and then we just had like an Xbox 360 over on the side, or Xbox One, so you could play video games, but no one played them.
Yeah,
you know, it's like I got my buddy Joe's like Xbox One, ran games, and got a projector screen.
Yeah.
No one used it. I was like, oh, okay. Well, I was kind of flattered that people just... Because I thought people were getting bored, because being in the studio is kind of boring.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But it was essentially almost like a...
show.
Yeah, almost. You guys were doing it so quickly, going through... I mean, like, so there wasn't a lot of, like, downtime in between songs at all. So, like...
Right.
It was, I mean, you know...
And we weren't sure how that was going to go.
Right.
We had no idea we were going to play it once or 10 times.
Yeah.
You know,
I think
there
was only a couple, like, you only did a couple of them twice, and...
we did most of them twice.
Oh,
yeah? Yeah, we did most of them twice, and then there's, I think we did, I don't know if it's three, one or two we only did once,
right.
I think. I can't remember what they are. I'll have to talk to John. But it was, everyone felt kind of comfortable with the performance, and once we, because the room's kind of, it was a bigger room. So once we put headphones on, we can kind of, like, hear each other a little bit better, and then we can, you know, kind of, like, dig in and be able to actually, like, record it without having to do a bunch of takes. Because I think Jerry and I recorded initially without headphones, and it was harder for us to hear, like, all the nuances of, you know, John's drumming. And so once we put the headphones on, we could hear it. We're just like, oh, okay, cool, you know. And then it was just no big deal at that point. It was just kind of fun, and we just kind of rolled with it and had a good time, you know.
Yeah, the only, I was constantly moving all across the room because, like, where I first set, I was set by Jerry, and I could hear all guitar, like, and then, like, you could hear a little Steve's vocals, and then you go to the other side, and you could hear horns and stuff, like, so it was kind of, it wasn't like a proper show where it was mixed
everything
properly, but yeah, so it was like, So it was interesting, but yeah, it was a cool experience, man. I'm glad I did it, and oh, you know, it was
awesome,
one of, one of those. I mean,
do you have any of that cake?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cake was good.
Yeah, yeah, that was cool too. They have the album cover on there and stuff. That was really neat.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Yeah, and then I thought the giveaways with the babies was cool too.
You have no idea how hard that was.
Oh yeah.
Meredith and I, mainly Meredith, my significant other, she drove all over St. Louis to find those because we happened upon it in like one of the dollar stores or something because we were trying to come up with a cool giveaway and I saw it and I was like, no way. Yeah. But they only have like two, you know, right. We had a whole bunch of people there.
Sure.
So we found the manufacturer online, and some people had it, and most people didn't. It was like some Chinese company that made it, and it was almost impossible to find. So we scoured like all the dollar stores and all of the Big Lots. I think it was it Big Lots? It's one of those places. But they had like similar babies, and I mean, it was tens of hours driving all over town just to find these things. And I was like panicking because we needed like three more, like the day before.
Right.
I was like, I need three more of these damn things. So somehow she went out there like a trooper or something. I think she went to some crazy neighborhoods by herself and went in there and, you know, got them. And, you know, then we just ripped all their clothes off and signed them. That's what it was.
Yeah, that was, I liked that. That was fun.
That was cool, man. So like on my Facebook page, that's the picture. It's like all the babies
right.
Lined up on that the banister.
It's a little creepy.
It is creepy. I had like people who weren't like really big fans of the band. It's like, what is going on with you, dude?
Right.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
I was like, it's a band thing, whatever, don't worry about it.
Yeah. You know? Anything on the release of that yet?
It'll be out for the pageant shows.
Okay.
So what we're going to try and do is, like, everyone who... we're going to send it to the mastering guy, hopefully October 1st. I was listening to mixes today that John put up on our kind of, like, shared website where we listen to stuff. Sounds great. I really like the direction it's going in, so... We'll have hopefully the mixes to the mastering guy on October 1st, and then we'll press them. And so everyone who is part of the Pledge Music campaign, we want to get it to them first,
mm-hmm.
for sure, for supporting us.
Yeah.
And then the actual public release will be at the shows.
Yeah. Cool, man. I know there's like all sorts of mixed opinions on the whole crowdfunding stuff, but I thought that was neat that you guys did that because for me, especially being a fan, you know, I've done it for several bands. Clockwork, they did a crowdfunding to help get their album going and stuff, and
right.
And it's just really cool to get like exclusive perks like that, like to be a part of the album recording or to be a to get a drum cymbal or whatever it is. There's all. Whatever you're into, there's probably some cool perk to go along with it that part of the band and for
right.
to be a part of the history of it, you know, that moment. And like,
so yeah, and we capped it out pretty early. It's it was more supposed to just be an experience kind of for some of our closest fans. Really, we only sold 50 tickets for it, so mm-hmm. it's I'd sold out like that. You know, it was really quick, and you know, people are like, let's sell more tickets. I was like, no. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're, that's it. 1 of 50, and you know, if you can make it, it's gonna be great. You know, but I mean, people were like blowing me up. They're like, dude, come on, I gotta go this. I was like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, this is our crew for the evening. This is our like recording crew, and we wanted to keep it extremely exclusive, and that was it. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's it really wasn't done. I mean, I guess financially it helps fund it for sure, absolutely. And then we had to pay for the building and all the other stuff. But it's more of an experience, you know. It's the one thing I learned about from a crowdfunding thing. It's like, it seems like it's, you know, you can crowdfund an album or you can crowdfund this and that. but you can crowdfund like an experience. Yeah, that's the one thing I saw. It seemed like, you know, of everything we did, that was the thing that, you know, got the most interest. And I was like, I didn't expect that, because initially we were just talking about crowdfunding just the album, and we were kind of on the fence over whether we'd do it or not. But it really turned out to be crowdfunding an experience, and the album was secondary. That's what it seemed like to me.
Yeah.
After doing it, and so it's like this light bulb like hit my head. I was like, oh, it's a completely different way of thinking about it. It's not just, you know, you don't make an album, but you have an album as an excuse to crowdfund an experience. Yeah. Is what it kind of ended up kind of being, which to me made it like 100 times cooler.
Right.
You know, because it wasn't like just give me $15, I'll give you an album.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which a lot of people do, and apparently it does really well, and it's amazing, and it's amazing to have support for people to do that, but to me it seemed like it was kind of like just a completely the whole thing had a completely different outcome than what we initially kind of thought it might be.
Yeah.
You know, in a much more positive way.
Right.
At least that's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just it was really neat to be like an exclusive, like you said, kept it 50 for make it exclusive, and it was like just to be a part of the moment, like it was something really incredible, you know, just to and especially like I said, as a fan, you know, like you can't beat that when you get that kind of an experience with one of your favorite bands, and it was just
I know, and that's kind of like how, you know, when we were all like talking about it as a band, that was the thing that kept coming up. It's like we were all just talking about it. It's like, you know, just think about it, you know, because everyone in the band is diverse musical interests, but it's like, just think of like one of your favorite bands and you could do that. I mean, yeah. Would you do? I was like, I mean, I wouldn't even think twice. I'd be like, absolutely. If I could be a part of that intimate moment and be a part of it and be on their record,
yeah,
you know. And then I was like, that sounds pretty kick-ass to me, for sure. Yeah. So it was a little scary for us because, I mean, it's completely new territory. You know, I mean, I don't know people who do that. I mean,
yeah.
I think people could do it. I don't see why they don't, you know, because there's a lot of bands out there that can do it. I mean, it's a lot of effort.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was probably 10 times the effort of putting on a show.
Right.
And I know it probably didn't seem like it, but it was like, oh my God, all the stuff you had to do to get that thing and turn it into what it was. And plus, you're just fingers crossed, hoping like the whole thing works. But it was fun, man. It was fun. It was exciting because you didn't know. It's like playing your first show, kind of a thing, because you didn't know if people would, you know, react to it or not. You know, no idea. It's just like uncharted water.
Yeah, it was like way different than I envisioned. Like. I kind of maybe have pictured something like a
stage or something.
Yeah, like an actual like pageant show,
right?
Where you guys are playing and they just kind of put a mic in the middle of the room and capture whatever happens live,
right?
Kind of vibe. That's kind of what
it was. Almost more like an in the round kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
Because you had the tiers above and below, you know, and everyone's just kind of around the group.
Sure.
You know? And that way, that by the way, was not the initial idea.
Yeah.
The initial idea is, you know, where Public House guys were giving out the beer samples out in the lobby. The initial idea was to record out there. And then we started thinking about it. It was like, I don't know if that's going to work.
Yeah.
And then we were talking about recording up at the very top. And then we were just like, I don't think that's going to work. And so it was like the last couple days we came up with the idea of putting it on that level where it was. And it just so happened to work out.
Yeah.
You know? So we kind of got lucky. Right. We definitely got lucky on that one.
Yeah.
Because you know? My initial vision was almost like what you said.
Yeah.
You know, of what it was going to be, and then it actually turned out to be something that was, you know, almost like a mix between a recording and a show, sort of, without us jumping around too much.
Yeah, all right.
And yeah. Steve covered in like Native American blankets.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was the other part of it. It was definitely way different to see you guys standing next to your mics and stuff, and not running around and you know. Watching,
right.
Watching Bill catch 4 foot air, jumping up in the...
I don't know how that guy does it, man.
Yeah.
That guy does it.
Yeah.
He gets up there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just... but it was, like I said, it was really a neat moment, man. I'm glad
it was fun. It was, yeah. Dude, it was so exciting.
I'm excited to hear with the outcome, hear with the final product.
It sounds a lot like the album.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
We were listening to it, and I was like, it sounds a lot like the album, you know?
Yeah. So. Well, man, I guess we'll wrap this thing up.
Cool.
I usually throw some tracks on if you want. You got any particular favorites that you like, maybe from that, or Galvanized even? Or
yeah.
What are you thinking? What do you like?
Well, we'll have to play Open All Night to celebrate the beer.
Yeah.
And we'll have to play Chupacabra because that's my jam.
Yeah.
And we'll play some Straight to Hell.
All right. I can do that. And then, yeah, so come see The Urge, November 20th and 21st at the Pageant. Two sets, right? And,
two sets each night. Mississippi night set, first night playing Receiving the Gift of Flavor all the way through. And then the big show after that.
Yeah.
And then we'll probably be hanging out and getting a drink in the front bar there.
I think it sounds incredible, man. It's going to, especially for me, not being able to, you know, the stories. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, when it come to life.
It's we got a lot of work ahead of us.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I think we can do it. And, you know, we know people that can help us along. So I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. All right, Carl, man, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you taking some time out to...
Oh, my God, thank you. Thank you for having me on as, like, the fifth Urge member. That's awesome.
Yeah. And then hopefully one of these days I can get Matt to do it.
You should hit him up at the show. Get him up for the show.
I talked to him at the recording, and I said, hey, man, you want to do this? And he's like, yeah, so just a matter of scheduling. It's,
you know how that is.
Yeah, that's the biggest part of this whole... thing is trying to find a date that works for everybody, trying to get people to, you know, I mean, we all got, you know, crazy lives outside of this too. We work and we got, you know, families and everything else and stuff. So
it's how it is.
Yeah.
It's life, brother.
Yeah, man. But yeah, thanks, Carl, and I will I'll see you soon, man.
All right, Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Yeah.
Straight and paint the perfect picture of the perfect perpetrator. Make me look down on the upstroke. popping and toe tapping. Ain't gonna be